everyone. Today we have with us, our guest is Cheryl Neal. Over the past 15 years, Cheryl Neal has inspired, motivated, and coached thousands of women to develop and implement change plans to create work and lives they love. She holds a BA in Education and Human Development from George Washington University and is pursuing an MA in Transpersonal Studies from Atlantic University. Cheryl is a professional member of the National Speakers Association, an image consultant, and is certified to facilitate purpose, mission, vision, and goal-setting sessions. Her work has been featured in The Washington Post, Essence, Black Enterprise, and on MoneyWise on PBS. Welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you, Emmy. How are you?
Great. I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Great. I noticed that you do a lot of these talks called the Perfect Blank, or the Perfect Life, or you fill in the blank, and that's been your work the last 15 years.
Yes.
And we're primarily going to talk about that in the next hour and how we can create the perfect life or something like that, right? Tell
that's
me
right.
more about that.
That's right. Finding, or it started out with finding your perfect work, which is what I was looking for, and ended up designing for my program for myself. Because I couldn't find anything out there that suited what I was looking for. And then other people said, I want you to do that for me. So that's how that finding your perfect work got started. And that was the first.
Yes, I read that somewhere where even 10 years ago, many of the jobs that we are going to be doing or the things that we're going to be doing the next 10, 15 years haven't been invented yet. And so it seems like either we wait for them to be invented or we invent them ourselves.
Yes, and that's exactly what I did. I invented my work myself. At the time that I came up with it, there weren't coaches coaching except for the sports connection. You know, that was not a field. I was looking for a coach, but one didn't exist at the time. Primarily, there were, you know, career counselors and so forth. So I took my systems analysis background as a mathematician and computer specialist, and came and treated myself like I was a client, and came up with my perfect work.
Is that how career counseling has evolved into coaching? Can you tell me about the industry of coaching or how that started in a nutshell?
Well,
sounds like you were ahead of your time.
I tend to do that. What happens is that career counselors traditionally, typically, you know, would take you through a number of these career instruments, like the Strong Indicator, Myers-Briggs, and some of those instruments to measure how what you're interested in compares with people in, with the interests of people in certain professions. And then they decided, well, if your interests match, then that would be a good profession for you. Now, coaching came along. Oh, my goodness. The first time I remember of hearing about it was a few years after I started doing what I called coaching. And it was an online coach training program. I don't remember the name of the gentleman who was attributed with starting that, although I understand a woman designed that program. Before he got claimed for it. But anyway, that may not be the case. But anyway, it was basically an online program. And the Coach University was the name of it. And then there now is an International Coaching Federation Association of Coaches that came out of that same group. The work that I started came out of wanting to combine the interest that I had with the work that I was doing and getting paid for. Before then, I had my job, which was mathematician and computer specialist, designing computer systems. And then I had my avocation, the things I loved to study, like astrology, numerology, philosophy, and that kind of thing. And I wanted to find a way to marry them. And that's what I actually started doing.
Don't we all? We have many of us.
Yes.
Fine. There's kind of three arenas in that. What you talked about is what you like to do, what you do well, and what people will pay you to do.
Exactly.
Three things.
Exactly.
Are they three distinct things? And I think about this all the time. And let's review that. What we do well, what we enjoy doing, because sometimes there are people, I remember it was something where if someone, let's just say if someone in the office hung pictures really well, they
mm-hmm.
actually did that well, but they didn't really enjoy it,
mm-hmm.
but people would pay them. So sometimes, in fact, some people don't like it when they do something well because then they're pigeonholed to do that all the time.
Exactly. But the thing is, you know, it reminds me of, I believe this is called a Venn diagram. Boy, I'm really going back to Bob.
You know what? That's what I'm drawing right now.
Are you?
I just drew one myself. I was drawing the circle and what overlapped.
Exactly.
Right? Is it Venn or Zen? No, Venn diagram.
V-E-N-N.
Is it three circles or two?
Well, in this case, it would be three because what you do well can intersect. What you do well is one circle. What you enjoy is another circle. And what you're paid to do is a third circle. But there is a place where those three circles intersect, and I would call that your perfect work. It's the stuff that you enjoy, that you do well, and that someone would pay you to do.
And this is a really great question. I've always had this go back and forth, this discussion is, what you do well, do you naturally do it, or can you cultivate doing it? And because the reason why this comes up a lot is my example. You have a child, or I have a child, whatever.
Uh-huh.
I have a child, and I want them to go to music school. I want them to take piano lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't show any sign of having any talent. However, how do you know until you actually put them in front of a piano? So
exactly.
At a certain point, it's like, well, do you really know what you do well until you do it? Or should you actually do something? Should you do any kind of task?
Both.
I'm always kind of conflicted over that.
Both. There are things that you do well, I believe, that you came into this world with, those talents you came into this world with. So it's important, you know, that children, for example, are exposed to all kinds of activities and opportunities so that those natural talents can come to the fore if they don't come already. I mean, there's some people who, you know, at two are drawing and writing symphonies and so forth. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There are those things. So the parent needs to be aware of what the child is naturally good at because those are the things that I believe the soul comes in with. But there are also talents that may be sitting there. But
you really have to work at it.
Right, would you say?
You have to work at it.
Well, some you have to work at and some you don't. I mean, I think everyone has, I don't know, let's just throw out the number three, at least three things that they're really good at that they not only don't have to work at, people get all excited about those talents that they have. And the individual is like, what's the big deal? Can't everybody do that? Case in point, from the time that I was a little girl, I was always good at math. I never could understand why everybody made such a big deal. Well, because it was second nature. It was easy for me. But that's something that I came into this life with. You know? So I started tutoring in grade school. And I've always tutored in math throughout my life. Somebody pops up who's, you know, got a problem, a child or adult, in math, and I end up, you know, working with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're the natural things that we come in with, and then I think they're things that are developed. But even those talents that are developed, I think we really had that in some stage that we brought into, because we're so natural at it and we're so good at it.
I wonder if there's some things that we've got to stretch. Let me use a really, not a very complex example, but I'm just using this as an example, as a discussion point.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen Dancing with the Stars?
I have not. Oh, yes, the program, the television program.
Yes.
Yes, where stars dance with professional dancers.
Yes, and I was looking up online and I was actually following Christy Yamaguchi.
Okay.
I was following her because I'm not sure if she won, but I think she almost won or won that whole season.
Oh, right, and I'm not sure. I think she got close or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I watched her, and I saw almost each episode, her performance. And I thought to myself, she's kind of having it easy in a lot of ways because she's a figure skate gold medalist, right?
Mm-hmm.
She does figure skating, which is sort of ballet on ice skates. So,
exactly.
So she's learned how to memorize a routine. So her compared to like an actor, I would think she would have an edge.
Definitely.
Because if an actor is, if that person is on the show and then she's on the show, hands down she will win automatically even without even watching the show. You would know she would win because she already had that skill developed.
Right, exactly.
And so I really learned a lesson from her because her mediocre was actually better than everybody else.
Yes. Probably because of
her skill. So your mediocre math was actually better than everybody else. Even if they tried really hard, their best would be your mediocre.
Exactly.
What really inspired me was that actually, even though she had a high baseline, she was at the excellence point, she actually went beyond her own excellence point.
Yes.
And that was the lesson that I actually got away from it. Because the reason why, there was one show where she had to act sultry. I think it was had to do with cha-cha or some kind of Latin dance.
Uh-huh.
And with her Japanese-American background, her background was that they don't act sultry. They act very proper.
It's not part of the culture, right?
Yeah, so she actually had to break out of not being herself.
Yeah.
She had to pretend to not be herself. So she was acting like she was somebody else. She broke out of that, and she actually set her own record. It's kind of like Michael Jackson, too.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about Michael Jackson, where at one point he did the Thriller album, so he had to break out of his own excellence.
Yes.
And that is... So at any one point, there's always excellent points for our own level.
Exactly.
And so I don't know why, but that really touched me because you would think, well, yeah, she was going to win anyway, but she actually beat herself too.
Right, and that's the thing that each of us has to face at different points in our lives. You know, at different points in our lives, it's part of the life stages. You have to face the fact that you know X, Y, Z, and are you going to continue along what you know, or are you going to stretch to expand and evolve into what you can be?
Yes, and that's a great question. We'll come back and we'll discuss that more with Cheryl Neal. That's spelled Cherryl. Last name is Neill, and I am Emmy Louie. We'll be back, and we'll talk with Cheryl Neal about what we like to do and what we enjoy doing and what we get paid to do and how that intersects. We'll be back. Welcome back. I am Emmy Louie. You're listening to the Emmy Louie Show, and we are here with Coach Cheryl Neal. And Cheryl, you said that you developed your own program to coach yourself into finding the perfect work. Please tell me more about that.
Yes, well, I was working at in a very sort of left-brain field of science and math and so forth, and knew that I had a lot more creativity that I wanted to explore. So basically, the program that I came up with starts with looking at what it is that you love to do. You were talking about earlier, you know, what you do well, what you're paid to do, and what you love to do. What I found is that if you can identify, you know, if one can identify what it is you really love to do and find out how to get as many of those things done in your day, week, year as possible, then the stress goes down, the happiness goes up, and the money comes in. There's a book called Do What You Love, The Money Will Follow. Do you know that book?
Yes. No, I'm not sure.
It's a older book, but it's basically that premise. You know, the more you do what you love, the healthier you are, the happier you are, the more able you are to handle stress and so forth. So that's what I'd start with. What do you really enjoy doing? And what are you doing now? And how much time are you spending doing the things that you love to do? And how can you move more of those things into your work life, and your personal life.
Yes. Yes, and I was thinking about when you said that, is that's why I've always been interested in going to my high school year reunions, my 20th or 25th and whatnot, is to see people pretty much, their character is pretty much the same.
Yes.
And to see what they ended up doing.
Yes.
And it really kind of surprises me sometimes to see where their talents get applied versus you already know that they have that talent.
Yes.
And sometimes just seeing that they have a talent, but sometimes it's kind of misapplied in a slight way. It's not totally misapplied. Otherwise, they would. And that's sometimes the problem, I think, for people is that if something is right on, if your talent is really applied, then you know it feels well. And if it doesn't apply, then you know it doesn't really apply, so I'm going to quit this job or I'm going to quit this job. But one of the problems is actually being in between and saying, well, there's sort of parts of it that I like, and then there's sort of parts of it that I don't really need, and then they stick with it. And those are the kind of things that I find is very, there's a lot of learning material, because isn't it somewhere in the gray in between? It's always somewhere where you're stuck in, your leg is in one part and your other leg is the other part, and seeing how that's going to maneuver and how you're going to be walking around.
Yes, and that's why it's so important to really look at yourself and look at your life and look where you're putting your energy and where you're putting your attention. Because part of the finding your perfect fill-in-the-blank approach that I use is, you know, what's your ideal? If you had all of your ideals, say if you're looking at your work life, everything, so you look at, you know, not just what you would be doing, but who you'd be working with and what kind of environment you'd be working in and how much money and compensation and so forth you want and whether travel is involved and so forth. You know, the more you can look comprehensively at what you want in a certain situation, first of all, the better informed you are about what you really want. Because lots of people really don't know what they value, what their values are, what's really important to them. And once you know what's really important to you, then you are in a better position to decide whether you want to stay in a current position because you can add some of those other things, or because the positives far outweigh the negatives, or, you know, in terms of what you really, really, really want and what your ideal is, or whether or not you need to gather your talents and skills and take them to another environment to do that work. Do you know what I mean? So it's about, you know, what is it that you most want in all those areas that include work, in this case work, but it could well apply to a relationship or a home or your finances. You know, what is it that you really want there? What's really important to you? What do you value? What do you have in the current situation? And what do you need to do to add those other things in?
And even sometimes when there are situations where there is a postponement, so to speak, where there's something that's happening maybe economic, politically, and something, these talents surface up again and again. It's a lifetime pattern.
Yes.
Can you give me any examples, or have you seen anything where there's an example of this that we're talking about?
Where outside conditions have an impact on what you decide or not?
Because one thing
to do?
I was thinking was, is there are things that many of us would love to do. At the same time, not many people would want to pay us for it. and then somehow there reaches a time when there are people, when if you wait long enough, there are people that will be willing to pay you for it.
Yeah, and so it is something. Did you finish your point? I'm sorry. Did I?
Yes, I did.
There is something about timing, which is, you know, which is another reason why I'm sure why I'm interested in, you know, those techniques that allow you to look at what's happening out in the universe, out in the world, and what's happening to your own personal calendar and clock, like, you know, destiny cards and numerology and so forth. I can think of one example. My work with helping people to find their perfect fill-in-the-blank or identifying their ideal, or even understanding that they have more power over what happens in their lives than they think, you know, was a struggle early on, you know, 15 years ago or so, because it was an education, it was a process of educating people about what their potential is. Now, thank goodness, with this new millennium, this seems to be the time that everybody's on the bandwagon. So now everyone's hearing about law of attraction and the so-called secret and all these things that I was using in my work 15 years ago and having to, you know, it wasn't the right time. I had clients and customers and people that would refer to me and people that I worked with, but now, you know, the field is wide open because the masses, you know, have come to this understanding that they have more power over their lives than they've been executing. And so individuals are ready, willing, and able to step forward and make some changes that they would not have considered before. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because the secret kind of it opened the doors to that you actually...
It's the timing.
You actually are a co-creator. You do create the reality.
Right, right. That information has been around for thousands of years. But apparently now is the time when are hearing that message and investigating it and going toward that information. You know, that information's been around, but now, so it has to do with timing. So in that sense, you know, you can have talents and skills that, you know, you're plugging along with, but the timing is not right in terms of getting them out to the masses.
So what do you do if the timing is not right?
Would you say?
What do you do if the timing is not right?
Well, you do what you can do. I mean, you have unlimited choices, so you can still, I mean, I didn't stop my work just because I had to do a lot of educating of people about their potential. You know, I found ways to educate them about what they could do, and I gave them little pieces, little bite-sized pieces to experiment with so that they could learn and prove to themselves that they are really manifesting what they want. And now It's different because there are more people who understand that whole process of creating your own reality and manifesting. Do you know what I mean? So at the time, I just had to sort of translate my program into maybe a primer level, an intro level, and present it at the intro level. Whereas now I can openly talk about creating your own reality and people know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people outside of a spiritual community or a community where, you know, where they study human potential and act on that. So
can
in that way, you know,
pointer?
You can find ways.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say?
Can you give me a pointer?
A pointer?
Oh, yeah. An example, or you said intro level, or we're beyond that.
Right. Instead of talking to people about the fact that they could, this is 15 years ago, instead of talking to people about the fact that they can create their reality, I would give them exercises to show that to them. For example, I would say, you know, what situation, I'd ask a question like, what situation in your life is really, really frustrating that you just really want to do something about, or some situation where you're ready to make a big change? Because motivation is very important. So whatever that area is, again, I would have them, you know, how would you like to see the change? So assuming you'd already made the changes, now what would that situation look like? Because by people talking about that or writing about that, then they get to see the end result of what they want. You know, I'd rather live in a house in Baltimore than where I'm living now, for example, an apartment in, I don't know, Saskatchewan. You know, so identify what those things are that would be in that change that you want. And then do a treasure map, or some people call them vision boards. You know, create a graphic, a visual of pictures and words that picture those things that are on your list about that change, how that change would look. And then pay attention to people that you talk to, and you'll find that you already know people who can help you to get to that change. So I would start with people doing, you know, taking the action versus starting with talking about the philosophy of it.
That's really that's very good. It's
because
it
then when they take
simple.
The action, they mm-hmm. see the result. Go ahead, sorry.
It sounds simple. At the same time, at that point, it was a lot of work on your end.
Right, but it didn't feel like work because it's, you know, what I love to do.
And,
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like when I was in undergrad school, my mother said, I was a math major, and my mother said, well, get your degree in education because you can always teach. And I resisted that. I did not want to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, every position I have ever had, I have been asked to design and present training.
See, isn't that a great example? Remember we were saying about what you do well, what you enjoy, and what
yes.
you get paid to do?
Yes.
That's the example. I was saying
good.
Earlier about the piano lessons.
Yes.
And your mother probably knows you just as well as you know. I mean, I can imagine parents are really probably one of the best people to know their children, I would think.
Well, not being a parent, I would question that, but at least I accept the fact that children choose their parents, so we've chosen them for a reason.
Yeah, and so she was saying that you would be good in education, and you resisted that, so it was almost like it was just a timing issue. And really, regardless, you still did it anyway,
right.
Regardless if you
that's
did
the point.
That was the formal training versus you still did it, and even though you are an educator, you wasn't formally an educator, but you still became an educator.
Exactly. And, you know, and she was right. Now, I'm sure, I would think anyway, that she recommended that because she was also a teacher, but also she was a Capricorn, so it was very practical about work, you know, and it is true that you can teach anywhere in the planet, you know, that profession doesn't limit you to a certain area.
That's a good point.
Right. So, you know, I think that's where she was coming from. But at the same time, you know, I chose her to be my mom for that very reason because she was right. I really did, you know, I do have a talent in educating. And I've always done it in one field or another.
That's a good point.
So,
and our herald to education, I'm here with Cheryl Neal. This is Emmy Louie, and we're talking about Cheryl Neal's earlier work in helping people visualize, and her entry level to law of attraction, as well as her education in that arena, her love for education. We'll be back. I am Emmy Louie. Welcome back. I'm Emmy Louie, and we are here with Coach Cheryl Neal, and we both love to educate, it sounds like,
mm-hmm.
and a neat question that I came up with, and I was asking this earlier, is that, remember I was saying that there are things that we do well, we enjoy, and we get paid to do, however, aren't there times when we have to open up certain skills, and it has to be downright, like, military camp to do certain things, in order to open up those avenues of what you enjoy and do well and paid to do. And this is, I'm going to use this example.
Okay.
If we like to educate, what if there are things that we would like to do that are downright kind of hard, sometimes hard to do, like polishing up our speaking skills, polishing up our presentations in front of video cameras. There's some things that are skill-oriented that sometimes is I would say hard to do.
Well, it's hard to do. I think you're calling it hard to do because it's something you haven't done before. But you know, but that's what life is all about. It's about taking what you know and do well and stretching yourself to learn things that you don't know to become this bigger, better person that you came here to become. So it may be hard because you haven't done it before, but it's just a matter of getting the skills, taking the class, taking the jump. You know, lots of educators, I know I'm one, who, you know, also love to be learners. I love to learn. So my approach to taking a class is fun. I always liked going to school. You know, I couldn't wait till September came to go back to school from the time I was a child. And I still feel September to be like that. It's like I should be taking some kind of class. What am I going to take? Fall is coming. Do you know what I mean? So I think it has the hardness of doing something new has to do with your approach to it. If you can make the approach fun and adventuresome and exploratory versus feeling like it's, you know, a military camp, it has to do with your attitude and your approach to whatever it is. And as long as your approach is light, then it won't feel so uncomfortable, I think.
That's a really good point. That's a really, really good point. That's very good. I don't want to say but because that's really bad.
And that's a really good point. And
that's a really good point. I don't want to say but because you're right. You're right.
Use and instead of but.
And instead of but. And.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And
and also, you also said that your mother was a Capricorn, and sometimes when we grow up, we feel like our parents have this viewpoint, and you often wonder, are they biased?
Yes, everybody's biased. There's no such thing as being objective.
I know. I don't know where that word came from, objective.
I don't either. The scientists made it up.
Objective?
Yeah.
I mean, objective. Objective.
Yeah, the scientists made it up.
Everything is made up.
Everything is subjective.
Everything is so made up.
Yeah.
It is so made up. And the easiest way to know that, if it's all made up, is you go to somewhere else where it's totally
different.
The opposite of yours.
Right.
So
exactly.
Then you know it's all made up, right? because they made that up, you made that up, and it's somewhat what you would call opposing. It's made up.
Exactly. Exactly. They're at odds, and yet they were both made up. Yeah, exactly. That's the way it is.
Objective, that word. However, what about nature? That can be objective, too.
Nothing is objective, in my opinion.
Yeah, because you have eyes, so you're always going to have...
That's right.
Even if there's news, if there's something that's hitting the news or there's something happening right in front of you, you're
going
to see it differently. Someone else is going to see it differently. And it's similar to having... many people in a room or having siblings, you might be living in the same place, but you're going to perceive it differently.
Exactly. They say eyewitness accounts are horrible, and they don't use them. The police don't use them because you can have five people see the exact incident and report totally different things, not just a little different, totally different. And that's because there is no objectivity. Everything is subjective. Everything is subject to the observer. And, you know... Finally, science has come through quantum physics to that conclusion.
The last few weeks, actually, in the morning, I've been listening to some really just grateful music,
mm-hmm.
and I listen to it before I go to sleep, and I feel so much better.
Yes. Yes, music is very important in terms of changing... let's say the changing the feelings and changing the frequency of energy, because that's what it's really changing. It raises the frequency.
And what I've been doing the last week, I've realized that there's something going on in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I read some left brain material, if
mm-hmm.
I read like a stock report or something that, or maybe that I haven't read before, it's something really intense where if I've read a physics manual or something, I would have to really concentrate on it. And when I get very overwhelmed with it, then I read something right brain. I've been reading that book, James Michener, his books.
Okay.
So, and I've been switching off, and I realize there's a real difference when I get tired of a material, then
mm-hmm.
I switch off to something that is almost the opposite, and really, it helps me a lot. And so music does the same thing. It puts me in another level.
Yes. Yes, they say, I've heard somewhere that that you ought to have music on sometime during the day, every day.
Sometime during the day?
you know, raises the quality of your energy and of the space.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if it's most of the day.
If it's what?
Most of the day we should have it on, like different types of music.
I do. Generally, I do. I go through periods where I want quiet, but generally I'll have some kind of music on.
Yeah, just to break it up, because it's really weird without music. And maybe that's why people who get sent to punishment, they don't get any. They're deprived. They're totally deprived of all that sensory. But
stimulation.
Yeah, and so going back to your mother about the whole. Sometimes we think that they are subjective. But isn't that weird how, and when we're teenagers, we feel like, well, they're saying something because that's where they're coming from and they're biased, so we don't want to go their way because they're biased towards that?
Yeah, I think that comes later. Teenagers just basically say they don't know anything. You know, your parents don't know anything. They're so behind, they're not cool.
I know. Why does that happen
all
the time?
That's quite a teenage. It's like each you know, each age phase has its characteristics, and that's part of the hormonal period of teenage. You know, every group of teenagers feels the same way, regardless of when they grew up. You know, and every set of parents of teenagers feel the same way. They feel like their teenagers are just, like, weird, and their music and their dress and their culture. You know, whether you go back in time or to the current time. That's just the nature of that period. Because that's the part, that's the time when, the hormones are getting going and the individual is starting to raise up as an individual. And in that point, the group is so important. So, you know, so teenagers and their group and what their group comes up with are just so much more important, generally speaking, you know, than parents, who just tend to be, you know, putting down the law and having thoughts about and old things, old thinking. No, that's the nature of teenage.
Yeah, but eventually we still got into education. I love when people know something after they have talked to you.
Yes.
That is.
Yes.
And I like it also when it's almost like you're almost channeling. It's almost like when you're in that mode, things are just coming out that you already have heard about, that you talk about a lot, but it comes out very fluidly.
Exactly. It's like it all comes together. It's like a recipe. You know, all the ingredients are there in your mind and in your past studies and what you know and so forth. But when you're answering the question or talking to someone about whatever the topic is, it all flows together. And you hear yourself saying it, too, and thinking, boy, that was really cool. I should tape that.
Yeah. It's I just enjoy it. I enjoy the whole transmitting information because that's one of the most powerful ways to affect people is affect them through their thought processes and giving people more information.
And the thing is, we get a chance to do that all the time because any time you have a conversation with someone, you have the opportunity to educate and inform them and uplift them. And so, you know, it happens one-on-one as well as one to a group.
Yeah, that's a really good point to list them. And because sometimes maybe some people are not, they don't want to listen to you, but you can still say a few nice words. It might not even be a lot of words, but it can be something, just a nice gesture. And you know when that really makes, when there's that really helps is when you don't hear it.
And sometimes they'll come back later and say, you know, even maybe much later, and say, you know, something to the effect of, you know, I was really resistant to that when you said that, but, you know, I started thinking about it, And then I realized it made sense, and then I practiced it, or I did something with that information.
I know.
Because I believe, you know, everything happens for a reason, and there are no accidents. So when you're having a conversation with someone, even about a topic that you think they don't want to know about, they want to know about it because the fact that you're having the conversation, they're in the conversation, they attracted the conversation. Consciously or unconsciously.
That's a good point.
Because it's all about law of attraction. You know, we're all attracting whatever we put out there on some level.
That's a really good point. That makes me really appreciative of just talking to people and
mm-hmm.
being on that level.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes talking might not be good, too, just like being there.
Yes.
I'd like that.
Yes, because you're still communicating. You're always communicating.
I know.
Verbally or otherwise, out loud or silently.
Yeah. You know, I was looking at your Atlantic University studies.
Yes.
And I wanted to talk about that. Would that be okay?
Yes. We can talk about it. I've kind of been on hold for a bit.
Okay, so why don't we talk about that when we come back, because Atlantic University was developed by Edgar Cayce, is that correct?
Yes, in 1930 when Pluto was discovered.
Okay, great. So we'll talk about that when we'll be back, and I'm Emmy Louie, and we'll take a short break. I am back. I'm Emmy Louie, and we're here with Coach Cheryl Neal. And one time my husband and I were in Virginia Beach, and apparently, my husband saw that Edgar Cayce's school was in Virginia Beach, and we were there for the weekend, and he didn't tell me that. I mean, this was a while ago. I don't know. It was like 10 years ago, and I didn't know that Edgar Cayce's school was over there, one of his schools. And when we were leaving, I saw in the brochure that his school was there, and I said, "Why didn't you tell me this?" And then he said, "If I told you, you would have spent all your weekend there."
That's right.
So I was like, okay, you're probably right.
Yep.
But I was really fascinated when you said that you held, were pursuing an MA in transpersonal studies from Atlantic University. And what got you into, I know probably what got you into it, but can you tell me a little more about that?
Yes, I was very excited. The university was started in 1930, the year that Pluto was discovered in Virginia Beach. Pluto wasn't discovered in Virginia Beach. The school was by Edgar Cayce. And it was open for a period of time, and then it closed. And it's been closed for a number of years, but it's just reopened in the last several years. And I was glad that it had reopened, because now what's happening is there are several tracks and one of them is transpersonal studies. In fact, I just got some material. I think they're adjusting that a bit. But I became familiar with Edgar Cayce's work, really ARE, years ago when I was living in Crystal City. They did a conference. They used to send their conferences on the road a lot, and they did a conference at the hotel right across the street from where I lived, and I went over and was fascinated by the material. And Virginia Beach has been one of my favorite spots ever since then. I suppose the people know that Edgar Cayce is called a sleeping prophet. He was born
the most famous psychic, and at least isn't he one of the most famous psychics?
Yeah, that's a term that has been used. What he actually did was he would go into these trances, and individuals would consult with him, but he would go into trance. Generally, people would come to him who had medical conditions that had not been able to be treated or treated unsuccessfully through other means. And they would go to visit Edgar Cayce, and his secretary would record everything that happened in the session. And he would go into trance, and in trance, he would actually give answers to questions that his secretary would ask. Generally, his secretary would ask them. And he would answer questions for that individual about whatever their health challenges were. And he would receive and communicate recommendations about how they needed to treat that situation. ARE started because it started as a library to hold and house all these readings that he did over all these years. What people found were was that even though they may not be the patient, if they had the same or a similar health challenge, the reading material would apply to them as well. So that's how the group got started. Now it's expanded, how the organization got started, but now it's expanded tremendously. You can go down to Virginia Beach, to Atlantic, Atlantic Street, where they're located, and go in the library and research any and every human condition, health condition that you can think of, as well as he spoke about reincarnation, about dreams, about life purpose. He did a whole section on astrology that I have not researched yet. And the university has reopened to provide master's degrees in several tracks that cover the materials that he spoke about in his dreaming state.
Well, that's good that it's opened back up.
Oh, yes.
It's a sign
wonderful.
Of the times, huh?
It's wonderful. And it's mostly a distance learning university. And some courses are offered on-site. So I take all the on-site courses I can because I just love going to Virginia Beach. Every time I go there, I see dolphins. It's a big dolphin hangout.
That's fantastic. I love it.
And double rainbows, too. I've seen a lot of double rainbows.
Oh, that's neat. And I can't even say that I've seen that many double rainbows. I lived in Hawaii, and I didn't see that many. I guess maybe I wasn't that aware of it, but I did. Maybe I was just looking at it.
I just saw one in Washington, D.C. last week. I was headed to the store. I couldn't believe it. It was amazing, and it was very clear, and they were very clear and sharp, and they stayed out for a long time. I spent most of my time watching them. I was supposed to be running errands, but I kept watching them thinking, this is so cool, and wondering why people were walking around busy as usual and not looking up at the sky. It's like, come on, people, don't you realize this is rare?
No. Yeah, and the ones that I saw where it was like 180 degrees, like it spanned the whole thing, and
yes.
Then it was on top of each other or something.
Yes.
It was pretty amazing, but I just often think about Edgar Cayce's work, and I often wonder what is the mainstream public thinking about this?
Well,
like, what are they thinking? Because isn't that evidence, totally evidence anyway?
There's lots of evidence. But, again, it's timing. The masses have to be ready for the information. You know when they say, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Well, all this material, including Edgar Cayce's material, has been around for ages. And various, you know, points in time, people get to the masses, when I say people, get to the readiness for it. But now, with this new millennium, everybody's ready. So everybody, or most people, are ready. And so people find, now that they're ready, they're connecting with this bodies of information, these bodies of information that have been available to them and to us all. So if the timing is right, it's time.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
And so... So this is it an accredited university? Is that what it is?
Yes, it is an accredited distance learning university. So most of your courses, most of your credits need to be taken in a distance form, online, and so forth. But there are, you know, as I said, there are different courses that are offered. Many of the courses, I don't know if it's most, but many of the courses are also offered on site. And so the way that I'm working on it is I'm doing what I can on site because it gives me an opportunity to be in that space and in that energy of Virginia Beach.
And I was thinking you probably would make a great faculty member.
You know, it's funny because before the university reopened, I've been taking courses from Mark Thurston in particular, is my favorite presenter down there at Virginia Beach. I've been taking courses with him and courses through Virginia Beach, through ARE for years. at least 20, I think, maybe more. And I've often thought about doing, I was interested in doing a class. I don't know what that would involve, but I certainly would like to do that.
You would be the perfect person for it.
It would be fabulous. It would be fabulous. So maybe that's something that's coming.
And that's the neat part about it is that when you teach something, another thing about teaching is not only giving people information, is when you teach something, you actually learn twice as much.
Oh, definitely.
And that's what I love about it.
Yes, me too.
It's like you have to organize your thoughts.
Yeah,
so that's...
You have to present them.
You have to have references.
And, yeah, it's wonderful. In fact, I haven't been teaching except one-on-one and in small groups for a while, and I'm really getting kind of itchy about it. So I expect that that's going to be changing soon, and I'll be, you know, doing more courses because I really miss it.
Yes, I am actually teaching a webcast.
Oh.
To architects, so I'm actually really happy about that, too.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to take a feng shui class from you.
I
need to do feng shui about my house, our perfect home that we're seeking.
Yeah, that's really important.
Yes.
Perfect house, perfect home, perfect everything.
Yep.
Well, good. Thank you for talking with me, Cheryl Neal.
This is wonderful.
Yeah, you know, and Cheryl Neal is a coach. And she helps people find the perfect life, the perfect work, and perfect all of fill in the blank.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. So
the perfect fill in the blank.
I thank you for talking with me the last hour. I am Emmy Louie, and see you next time, Cheryl.
All righty. Take care.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye.